Hi, and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the podcast. I'm Chad Haas from the Developer Relations team.
I'm Romain Guy from the Android Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from Android Studio.
And I'm Ryan Mitchell. I work on the Android Framework team.
Android Framework team doing what?
So
what
is it we're talking
about? Let's talk about
on...
the entire framework today.
So I work on specifically resources, the resource subsystem that includes the compilation of resources in your res directory and the extraction of those resources at runtime.
Okay, so resources, correct me if I'm wrong, date way back to what, M3, right? Like that was from the very beginning of Android, we had resources as a way, but why don't I let you describe it? Why do we use resources as opposed to, you know, code-driven approach to solving the same problems?
Okay, well, resources really was designed because devices have a lot of varying configurations. There's a lot of different form factors, sizes, and different things can change, like what the user wants to see in different like times of day, layouts and directions of screens that like really change how you actually want to render your content. And so the resource system was really invented so that you could have these primitives, these resource values, these sizes, colors, strings that vary and can be resolved depending on the different device properties. So we have all these different configuration qualifiers that people create resources based off of. And it can range for, it ranges from everything like screen density to size, layout, the language of locale that your device is running, the version of the device. There are so many different things. And so in order to have developers not have to have that custom logic in their application, like hard-coded, we have this integrated resource system where everything can just be compiled into your application and you just have a device configuration. You don't even have to actually specify that. And then you just retrieve resource values depending on what device you're running.
And one really nice thing about this from the tool's perspective is that when you don't sprinkle this logic into the code where, you know, you're saying, if language is English, use this string, else if language is French, use this string. No, you just have these data files. And from the tools, well, those are files we can just edit because there's no danger of being confused by really convoluted extracted methods that call other methods that read data from disk and send it over the network kind of thing.
And there's another thing we do, right, for resources. There's all the configurations, but there's also a lot of optimizations of resources that's happening.
When we
package them. Can you talk more about that?
Sure. Let's see, where do I even begin?
So well, a good one, for instance, is XML, right? Like,
right,
the
right.
XML
okay.
files are not what people think they are.
Sure. So AAPT, the Android Asset Packaging tool, runs when you build an application. It's separate than like Java C that compiles your Java code. AAPT compiles your Android resource code. And so what it does is when you have like a layout file, you can do, it has this whole specific format, right? You can reference resources. You can have like these attribute values in line. And so we don't just store that as plain text. If people listening don't know. AAPT works really hard to compress the size of that like information you're trying to pass into a binary format that the runtime knows how to extract. So it'll do things like deduplicate strings that you have in your XML file. So if you reference the same attribute twice, it reduces how much space it takes up. It compiles integers. Well, it will like try to point to, it is a lot of deduplication, but it will try to, maybe I already hit on it, but yeah, like it's an optimized format that's not plain text.
It's a complicated format. You know, one of the first things I did on the tools team, we noticed that in Eclipse projects, the r.java class, every time you modified something, r.java had to be regenerated. It was very slow. And so I thought, I will, instead of invoking this native executable on all your resources, which is, you know, AAPT, or actually I would love to know, what is the correct way to pronounce AAPT according to the AAPT team?
Oh, I just say the whole thing. I've always been saying AAPT, just taking that whole one
okay.
breath.
All right. It's official.
I think that's apt.
Yeah. Nicely done. And so I thought, okay, well, this seems very simple. I can see the algorithm going from resources to generating this Java file. So I started and I thought, well, I can go further. I can actually create the packaging. So I tried to recreate by just observing the bits what the XML translation is, and I could not get it right. And I started looking at the source code, and it looks like really what it's doing is mmapping the data structures from within the tool. From, you know, this was all written in native code, and so yeah, I failed in that project and went back to using APT.
About a little explanation of that. So the runtime, what AAPT2 does is generates some binary files. It generates two types of files. So there's a resource table, which contains mappings of your resource IDs to their values. Backing up a little bit, every resource that you like spell out in your application is given a resource ID that's mentioned in your R Java, as we said before, or your R class. And that's really used to reduce, like when you're referencing a resource, we only need to encode a 32-bit integer rather than having this whole string name. So that's one of the optimizations that AAPT is really made for. And so, yeah, when AAPT2 generates this resource table, which maps the IDs to the different values for different configurations, what it does is it generates a format that's memory mapped at runtime. And it's made like
efficiently. Because you share the header files, correct?
Right. We share the header files with the runtime library. And so what we end up doing is, we end up creating like the structures. We have like everything's like, you know, aligned to the correct bytes, and we make sure that we generate the structure so that the runtime can just simply scale, like start at the memory map region and just like cast things to struts and then just be like, okay, so this is this, for example, this res_value, this is what I refer to it as, but the res value strut is this bytes long, it can hold this kind of information, and it's really a way for us to like have this random access file that we can, whenever you have a resource, we can just kind of index into it, get the resource value as quick as possible, and get out of there. So that's what AAPT2 can do better than other tools. And when the platform evolves, AAPT2 evolves. And so as you use newer versions of AAPT2, you'll get better optimizations, new features, and so always bumping up that Gradle version is useful.
Well, say more about why those two things are related.
Okay.
Gradle and APT, because they're installed in totally separate places.
Right. So it wasn't always like this. AAPT2 is the newer version of APT. APT, we stopped using in Google around 4 years ago, I feel like, or I guess really 3 years ago. But AAPT2 is now bundled with the Android Gradle plugin release. Before it was, when you had like a compile SDK, we'd grab the AAPT2 executable from that like SDK that you're compiling against. So if you're compiling against O, we'd grab the O version of AAPT2 and then just build everything. We wanted to make AAPT2 updates like streamlined so that we can get them to people faster and not have to wait on a platform release. So what we did was we bundled it with the Gradle release. And essentially, every Gradle version has an associated version of AAPT2. And it's tested with, they're tested only like those, that AAPT2 version specifically in that Gradle version so that we can have the newest updates stream to developers as soon as possible, rather than having to wait for a whole another like dessert or number release.
Does that mean that if you are using a single version of AAPT2 instead of one that was synced with each release, do you then have all the code specific to different releases inside of it? Because they may get the latest Gradle plugin, but still be building for, you know, target SDK earlier version of the release.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you use the latest tools, everything's backwards compatible. So as long as if you're using older tools, everything's also forwards compatible too. So you don't have to really worry about what version of AAPT2 is. It's like, it prevents you from using newer features. Like Gradle and Android Studio will have like new features that need a certain AAPT2 binary. And same thing with AAPT2 as well. And so if you're going to use these new features, then you'll have to update your AAPT2 like binary in your Gradle plugin version. Luckily, we haven't been launching a whole lot of features in the past couple of years, but it's not to say that won't be the future.
I mean, I think even when it was distributed with the OS, it still had to produce files that were compatible to older versions because, you know, you build for the latest you know, SDK, but you still need to work on older platforms.
Right. So we the APT2 does do some things like it tries to version out resources for different SDKs so that actually it can not only run correctly on the older devices, but it actually is the files that we load are smaller and have their necessary resources. So it's always thinking about backwards and forwards compatibility.
So you mentioned work that you've been doing, you know, features that you've been doing or not doing in the past couple of years for APT2. We had a podcast, it must have been like 4 years ago, with the person who originally worked on APT2. And this was before it was the default in Studio. It was an optional thing that we recommended that people try at that time, but it was not de facto. What have we done since then besides make it the default? Like, are there some interesting features in APT2 for those people that haven't really tuned into this technology since then?
Sure. Language-wise, for Gradle developers, I feel like there's been less work. We've done some things specifically in APT2 that's been helpful for the platform. But for Gradle, I mean, just in general for app developers, one of our goals, as I said before, we've been unbundling APT2 from the platform release, so the dessert releases. So what that means is like we're trying to do things like, first we tried to make sure that APT2 is completely compatible with APT1. So all the features in APT1 are in APT2. You don't have to worry about backwards compatibility issues and upgrading, and everybody should have upgraded by now. Second, APT2 is, we're trying to do things that have like when we're framework developers and we have to make a change, a lot of the time you have to like when you're changing something in the manifest, you have to also make a change in APT2 to accept that type of modification in the manifest. And so now we've been really trying to unbundle it from the framework perspective, from framework developers having to require Gradle developers to use a specific version. It's more like any APT version can handle any SDK version. So that's the work we've been really doing. And one of the things that we're like interested in doing for third-party developers is working more on APT2's ProGuard generation. We have APT2 is actually able to generate ProGuard rules depending, like it's able to keep like if you reference a class name with like the class at with like a class attribute in your XML file, we generate like rules to make sure that you keep that so you don't have to write that rule explicitly. It's very limited what our functionality is. Right now, we're able to like keep rules we're able to generate. And so what we're thinking about in the whole unbundling APT2 and having less like hard coding of things in APT2, we're trying to give libraries more ability to express like how they want different program rules to be generated. So that means like if you could define an attribute and say whenever this attribute's used, for the value of this attribute, generate this ProGuard rule. So we're trying to do things basically to have people rely on APT2 changes less, and anything we can do to make the lives of app developers and framework developers easier. That's what our current goal and our current direction to APT2 is.
Well, on the topic of ProGuard, so I know the APT has always had this flag, which can emit all classes referenced from your layout, such as custom views and preferences and all that. But often you don't really want to exclude those because they might be referenced from a layout that itself is unused, right? So like you kind of want the whole graph. And I thought I heard that we had some sort of support for conditional ProGuard rules. Is that work done? And can you say anything more about it?
Sure. I would say the work is evolving. It's never finished, but the support that we have right now actually is I think there was some bug with AGP, and they just didn't recommend turning it on the second. But from the framework perspective, from what we've been doing inside of the Android build system, yes, it works. For anybody listening, for more information on what we're doing, we're starting to generate newer like keep rules that say like if you're using this layout file, then we start keeping the classes referenced inside of that layout file. Otherwise, we don't. We try to like minimize how much we keep. So, yeah.
Right. So the resource shrinking that has been added to R8, for example, can then take advantage of this to not have to like go and reread all the layouts, yeah, for correct. Example.
Yeah.
Another thing I'm aware of, I think your team has done is, you know, really kind of serve Gradle's needs, because I think the main thing that Gradle cares about, or the Android Gradle plugin, and probably the platform team and framework team not so much, is really minimizing build overhead and really trying to make incremental builds with Gradle as fast as possible. So I think APT was like this monolithic tool, which on its own would get all the resource directories and sort of go and scan all through it and emit all the things like the AP underscore file and all that. Whereas in APT2, it's been decomposed, right? So there's all these different stages that Gradle can invoke. Can you say a bit more about that?
Sure. So it's a little bit different architecture before. Yes, the APT's original like monolithic just package command that we had would do everything from parsing the XML files and converting them to intermediates that APT2 could understand, and then trying to, or APT, but intermediate data structures in APT would take that information and generate a whole APK just in one step. And so APT2, what it does is it can scan over a whole directory and generate individual files for each one of your like XML files or your different like drawable files. And so what it does is it makes it like a one-to-one intermediate file in this compilation phase. And then during this linking phase, what we do is we take those intermediate files, we consume them, and then we generate the final APK. So what that allows us to do is have to minimize like when one file changes, we only have to recompile that one file within like the build system, whether that's Gradle or if that's our Android build system. And then, yeah, we just have to do this one monolithic link step. So it does improve build time a lot more, and it makes a lot more incremental approach to how we used to compile resources.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because and it's a little less true now because most apps, or at least apps, use vector drawables a lot more. But I remember that APT was doing a lot of optimization on the PNG files or the NAND patch files. Like it was looking at all the pixels, and if the image uses less than 256 colors, then it generates a palleted version of the image because it's smaller. And of course, when we were doing that over and over again on all the assets, well, that was not the fastest way to do this. So it's good that APT2 like takes that out of the equation.
I think that was one of the first things we did with the Android Gradle plugin was to not call APT to do that and write our own multi-threaded version that can run in process where we could do the caching to avoid it. So I think as a Gradle user, this hasn't been a particular problem. But there's so many other things that we don't want to duplicate, such as the binary XML files. That having this decomposition into different stages is really important.
Right, yeah. So as the platform evolves, then Gradle can just rely on APT2's logic to generate it correctly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's this other thing I've seen in APT. I'm not sure exactly how much of it we do, but I believe that we're doing a bunch of optimizations now to handle like right to left attributes, so that, you know, if you say start, we will automatically infer that you also mean left if you're including a device that is older than, I don't know, API 17. Is that when we got right to left text? I think that maybe we're also removing and combining resources from that have older version specifiers than your apps minist and things like that. Can you say more about the kinds of fix-ups you do to the resources on behalf of the app?
Sure. So yeah, we do. If you have applications lower, if you have resources lower than your minimum SDK, we do have logic to prune them. We have a lot of like pruning logic. So we have this whole like tree structure of configurations, right? Like you have configurations that can essentially dominate each other at runtime. So like that they'll like you can define a configuration in your application, but will actually never, that value will never get chosen at runtime because of the way like the other configurations are chosen. That's just, it's completely dominated by another configuration. So like, for example, if you had a configuration with like screen width and density, or screen width and like version code, and then you had like another one with the same screen width and version code, if one's higher than the other, there's a chance that there'll be no way for the other version to get resolved at runtime. So if they have the same, if they have the same value and they have the same, like, and one dominates the other, they were able to like actually prune what resources are actually encoded into your final APK. So we have some like, we have some of that logic where we're able to do a lot of deduping of resources with the same values and resolving resources that can never be resolved and just removing them from the tree entirely. And then we also have some optimizations that we started to introduce recently where we can take the paths of the zip file and shrink them down as small as possible, but still represent them correctly in your string pool so that when you look up a resource by its like non-obfuscated name, it still comes up correctly and you save on APK size. And we also have some other things where we can remove like resource names. Like if you use resources get identifier, which is like a reflective way to retrieve the value of a, retrieve the resource ID of a resource. If you use that API, you need like the resource names encoded into the resource table. It's a really slow API. If you're using it, you really shouldn't be using it. You really don't have to use it. But if you are not using that API, then you can turn on this other flag in AAPT2. I think you just have to put in your AAPT flags right now. I don't exactly know what it's called offhand, but it may be if you're just on optimization, it may just happen automatically right now.
We should probably put that into like the default project so people don't get in the habit of using that API and they can like opt in as opposed to opt out.
Right. We do need some like a lint warning or something, but I know like libraries still use get identifier and like constraint layout uses get identifier. And so some places you can't really completely like get rid of all resources. So we have like this like way you can whitelist the resources that you need to keep and then say that, or allow list, and then say that the other ones you can just get rid of, and it really reduces APK size. So we're trying to do more things to reduce APK size we're starting to think about more things that we can do, like how we can structure the resources table so that we can have better, like less cache missing at runtime if you have like related resources, to better optimize the memory map like structure of the resources table, and just things that other like if you try to like do this if you try to like spin your own resource system, it's going to give you a nightmare. It's going to give you a headache.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like performance and small size is like a top priority. The other example I listed, where if you only specify a start or end attribute, right, actually is more of a compatibility thing. So it makes your app mm-hmm. work well on older platforms. So it's a, you offer a wide range of services.
So whatever, like generally people come to us and like, yeah, this would be useful for app developers, and this makes migration easier. And so we just accept it. It's just, we're trying to think about what would be, what's correct from like an unbundled standpoint. Like we don't want everybody hard coding everything in AAPT2, but there are definitely like attributes that degrade on to other attributes in different API versions. And so, yeah, we do have logic for that too. So there's a lot of special things that we do.
Was it Android 10 where you introduced runtime resources overlays?
Well,
is that last runtime release?
They've been introduced for a while. We've continually been doing work on them, but our work that we're doing right now is like targeting OEMs, and then we're trying to see how we can also extend this to third parties in the future. So I can talk a little bit about that, or I can talk about the resource loader API that we added in Android 10, and the
That looks fantastic.
Yeah. Like, so, okay, well, I'll talk about that first. And I can also talk about the kind of things that we're working on performance-wise before I talk about like OEM-specific stuff. That sounds
sure.
Good. So yeah, in Android 10, we added, there's this deprecated API called Add Asset Paths in Asset Manager. And what it allowed you to do is say, this path on this device, I'm trying to add it, like this zip file containing resources, I'm trying to add into my asset manager to inject additional resources. And we made that a like deprecated API because the way we refactored the resource system a couple years ago, it really didn't fit in. And it also, it just wasn't the direction to which we wanted to go. And so in Android 10, we created a whole new API, the resource loader API. And essentially what it does is it replaces add asset paths. It allows you to do things like have this, like we talked about, AAPT2 creates a resource table. Well, now you can have a resource table like file in memory, in RAM and inject it into your resources and then add and change the value of resources at runtime. You can also do things like take a directory and say this directory, treat it like it's an APK that has resources. And so you can like download assets and drawables and layouts, just put them on the file system, say this this directory, just resolve resources like it. And so when I do like get drawable or get I open asset, it will read from the directory and you're able to inject resources from all different types of sources now dynamically. And it really helps with a couple of use cases like video games that that like stream that need to like pull assets on the fly without like needing a split update or like an application update. And also can be used for things like security, like you can unencrypt, you can have like an encrypted resource table, unencrypt it into memory and then inject it into your application.
Yeah, I was going to say being able to load assets from a directory, for instance, sounds also super useful potentially if you're working on a game for development or debugging, because instead of repushing a big APK or a big pack of resources, you can just push a new resource, automatically detect the file change and reload that.
That's absolutely correct. And I think I could say this, but like we've been experimenting with when you're like compiling your application, just being able to really reduce how much is compiled with AAP2, how much is relinked, and then how much is pushed onto the device rather than installing an application. We can just push resources onto the device. Hasn't been launched or I don't think really announced, but something we're experimenting with.
So, I mean, this sounds really powerful, and it's something that developers have been asking for a while because they want to be able to stream new assets down or, you know, tailor their app to a specific event or, you know, whatever it is. But like, can you help me understand how it works? Because it seems like one of the brittle or unique aspects of resources is because you do all the pre-compilation, all the resource IDs are set at build time. And you can't like inject stuff later that's going to mess with that table or overlap with the existing resource IDs. So then how do you dynamically load other things without sort of conflicting with the stuff that you've loaded already?
Right. So there are different techniques. And there are definitely, I will say before, we're definitely thinking about tooling that we can do to create that we can make using this API easier. But there are ways to get around like resource ID, like collisions by, for example, putting your resources in a different resource ID namespace. So AAPT2 can say like, we have this concept of like package IDs. So like we say like each package has its own essential like unique identifier. And so the Android package has a unique identifier of 1. Applications usually have a unique identifier of 127, which is 7F. And so you can put like a library could, for example, have additional resources that injects into a different like chunk of resource ID namespace. And so that you can inject different resources, but you still need a resource like our Java from somewhere to be able to reference those resources.
I mean, I'm having some flashbacks to instant run here, but you know, we ran into a lot of the problems that Chet mentioned where we were trying to update your resources on the fly in the app. And, you know, there might be fields stashed here and there. And what was actually very helpful to us that instant apps came along. And so the framework suddenly had to be much more disciplined about where and how it invalidates caches. And so it actually worked much better on like Marshmallow and above, where it supported sort of more dynamic resource adding and removing. And I'm assuming that's only continued with the work that you're talking about now.
Right. So yeah, when you add in So eventually how the framework works is that when you add a resource you create this thing called a resource provider, and it's essentially like provides like a resource table or slash the APK that you're trying to inject. You can add that into a resource object. So you can like grab a context, add, like get resources and then add loader and then create, add this like provider into your resource object. And what happens is it stays like it's not persistent across app updates, but it's persistent across like configuration changes. And when the asset manager dies and gets like recreated in the framework, which applications can't control, you don't have to like have logic that reinserts your injected assets now. So the way it works is that it basically tells it basically creates this section of, well, you can have this like resource provider, and it can be shared across multiple resources objects. And so if you, for example, injected it into your application's context, it's all of the context created from the application context now include these injected resources as well. So this whole like API has a lot of functionality that the previous API didn't. But yeah, it's...
Well,
it's,
I mean, I think these are the kinds of things that, you know, with applied changes, we've, I think we're relying more and more on this because, you know, having sort of good support in the resource system for doing, for example, things like, stable IDs has helped us a lot, right? Because it used to be that you add a new resource in a layout, if it's alphabetically between something else, it's going to push all the other IDs to some new number. That is really, really bad for incremental updating of resources. But if we can just say, hey, these are the previously assigned IDs, so now go insert at the end of that, that is much better. And I think that's also one of the things that APT2 offers.
You just gave me a nightmares, like bad memories about maintaining the stable IDs for the framework resources in the platform. So something...
You're the one who did that? All right.
No. A lot of people on the framework team were doing that in every release, but thankfully something that app developers don't have to deal with. But yeah.
Well, I believe that this was is a really, really difficult issue because I think there were other vendors who took, you know, our framework and then added their own IDs on top of sort of like just continuing the numbering right after ours. And then in some update, we added one more resource and now it's clashing, and really exciting things happen when you have different resource types for the same number.
Yeah, we're trying to leave gaps and ranges for this kind of stuff, but
yeah,
it didn't always work out.
And so we're definitely thinking about tooling we can provide in the future that would make this easier. And working with resource IDs is something you really don't want to do often. So anything we can do to make this API easier would be like ideal. Right now, it's really being used to stream primarily like assets and like drawables and like things the things that don't necessarily need resource IDs, the whole like use case of having a resource encrypted, like you have your whole resources ARC encrypted in your application, and then you decrypt it into like a file on memory, a file on RAM. That ends up reusing the same like R Java. And so that's another use case that we're seeing, that we were trying to develop for and that we're seeing now, so that you don't have to actually mess with resource IDs. It's more of just letting you provide resources from a different source.
It seems like some of the fragility or complexity in dealing with it comes from the original architecture, which was basically at the stage of Android where optimization was king, right? Where it was important to strip things down to the bare minimum of what you needed and, you know, primitives versus object types and don't, you know, avoid data structures at all costs. And so we ended up with this like flat list of integers, which is kind of not terribly flexible to deal with. And then you end up with other workarounds on top of it, like, well, let's declare a range so that we don't bump into this thing, which is good. But, you know, a more general solution where you have like data structures or symbolic names as opposed to just integers would be easier. I wonder in the current day if it would make more sense to have something else, or if this is still like one of the fundamental things of the platform where, you know, the performance is still that important. Or is it just that, you know, backward compatibility, therefore we have what we have?
Well, this actually, you know, is exactly what I wanted to bring up in the next question. What about Compose? I mean, Compose is actually a typed resource system.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we're also continuing to use the resource system. So I don't know if you want to take that or if Roman should take it, but say a little bit more about sort of the future of resources on Android.
Before you take it, you mean it's a typed resource system in that it's not using resources, right? Everything is coming from code?
No, it's basically code with types. Like, so you can't accidentally mix up a string and a layout.
For the UI, but you can still access the resources APIs to load your strings or your values or your drawables, bitmap stuff like that.
And we encourage that, right? Like this is the right way to do internationalization, for example.
It's better than doing it in code, yes.
Yes. And yeah, so I think we're still like planning, right? How we're going to do this in Compose. Like I know that you really don't want to have to do duplicates. Duplicate the configuration, like value resolution logic that's already existing in Android and have that in code. Or the runtime, really, it's really this optimized, like this configuration, like choosing which resource value to do at runtime. Unless we can just re-architect Android and not have to do things by configuration, not have to resolve these kind of things. The native library that we use right now is going to be way faster than anything in the Java layer that does the same thing. So I don't think we are exactly sure, but I think we have to like really measure performance and see what opportunities we have.
Yeah, like I'm under the impression that our current strategy for Compose is layouts are code, everything else is a classic resource, and we're not going to change the resource system unless the replacement is much, much better, right? So like if we can come up with like a tenfold improvement to, let's say, handling of plurals, well, then we'll think about it. But we're not going to do it if it's the same.
Especially since it's the typical problem where every app on the planet on Android is using the current system. And whatever we come up with would be, you know, incrementally adopted because probably only available for new devices and releases. And therefore, people aren't going to care for a while. And so...
Well, also for the incremental updating, like we hope that a lot of people will start sprinkling Compose into their existing apps. And if you had two resource systems and two string systems, and, you know, that would kind of be... unfortunate. I guess themes, we're not just doing layouts, we're doing themes as well, right? For
themes are in code, yes.
Yeah, and I think that no one is sad about that, right? I think that styles and themes are really, really tricky on Android.
The trick to having flexibility in future API designs is to make the original one so hard to use that people look forward to actually changing their code to adopt the new one.
That's actually my
building
strategy.
Building in future job safety.
You had mentioned something about performance improvements you were doing as well. Was that related to the resources loader stuff or just general resources work you've been doing?
It's I wouldn't say it's actually completely related. It's more related to splits in the future of Android. So we told people like feature splits, configuration splits, app bundles, this is the way to go, right? As people continue to scale their applications, we only can handle so many like splits and features at one time, at least in the runtime today. And so we're thinking of ways that we can have in the framework to optimize like splits and to optimize resource resolution. And so what we wanted to do in preparation for all of that was really come up with better benchmarks. So we had a lot of micro benchmarks in the framework for resources, but that really doesn't do the resource system like our developers justice, because like we said we memory map the resource ARC. Well, if you're reading the same, like if you're doing a micro benchmark and you're reading the same resource over and over again, you're going to hit the page cache, you're going to hit caches, it's going to be faster than when you actually launch an application, your cache missing and your page missing and all over the place because your resources are large, your APK is like kind of memory mapped. And so we really wanted to like capture what happens at resources. What happens when you like start your application or when you're a game and you're like loading different like drawables and images and assets. And so we're trying to think about how we could actually make a synthetic benchmark. Well, at first we're thinking about like manually looking at applications, seeing what they do, but we came up with the idea of actually recording like what resource calls are happening in your application by instrumenting the framework and then replaying those in a benchmark. So what we ended up doing this last release, we spent some extra time that it's not actually a feature, you know, on the device and it's currently not available to third-party developers. But we ended up generating some code that essentially wraps the resource system. And what it does is it looks at the resource IDs that you're querying, it looks at the objects that you're passing into it, it serializes them into this like intermediate language, and then takes that intermediate language and finally generates code. And so we're able to, instead of like just launching an application and seeing how long it takes, because there are a lot of things that are involved in that, and you can't actually, you know, just take like an application like Maps and expect it to work the same like offline and online, or expect it to have the same network quality, right? So we really wanted to be able to capture those workloads and isolate them to the resource system. So yeah, we created this whole recording replaying framework, and we're using it now to drive how we do, how we like create, when we ever create changes, we can like see like how this would affect an application or different application use cases. And without that change right now, I think I'd be really lost in like all the changes that we're doing for the resource system to optimize splits and optimize the other changes that we're doing for Android 12. Yeah.
I think that comes after 11. This is not an announcement nor commitment to future software development processes or namings.
What will be the dessert name for Android 12, Chet?
No comment.
That's a lame name.
It's an excellent dessert, though. So what didn't we talk about? Well, we didn't talk about resource overlays, although you said that's mostly applicable to OEMs anyway, so a small portion of listening audience probably.
Yeah, I could say a little bit. We are working on runtime resource overlays. Before, a couple releases ago, we really locked them down and said that they're really dangerous, and just allowing anybody to install them and configure the platform is actually just incredibly dangerous to the user experience and to OEMs and to applications. And so what we've been trying to do is develop that way to declare resources as overlayable, specifically this whole like resource overlayable API. And so we've been really working towards allowing you to define resources as overlayable inside an application, and then say who can actually overlay these resources. So like, can applications sign with the same signature? Can any overlay sign with the same signature, or any overlay like on the device change my resource values? Can overlays on different partitions change my resource values? And then we started to go after like who could enable these overlays too. So what runtime resource overlays are, I don't know if I just explain for people that don't know. Runtime resource overlays are essentially other APKs that you can install and enable. And they have resources in them that change the resource values of different resources that they different applications that they target. So for example,
this would be a way if I wanted to like change the, you know, like make all my apps speak like it's Pirate Day. I could like go in and like duplicate all the resources that I see and change them. Is that the use case here?
Such a good feature for the R release.
Yeah. Nicely done again. Another feature that I feel like I've seen, and maybe this is not an APT thing and maybe it's more of a system resource thing, but I swear I saw some special pseudo locale we have where we picked letters that aren't the right ones, but they look like the same letters. And this is supposed to help you track down applications where you aren't internationalized. So if you see a word and it doesn't look like it's written in this funny font, you've forgotten to internationalize it. Am I remembering that right? And is that an APT thing, the pseudo locale?
Yeah, that's an APT thing. That's actually, I think, was done before I started here. And so that was actually done a while, like several years ago.
Yeah, yes. And, but per your earlier, you know, promise, APT2 supports it.
Yes, yes. So APT2 allows these pseudo locales that simulate different, like, yeah, right to left or left to right languages, so that you can see when you're running at runtime, you can actually, I'm not sure if this is done at in the layout inspector, or if this is also, I don't know what tools are available at runtime that utilize this, but basically what you can do is set the configuration to one of these pseudo locales and then just visualize your application as if your device had this locale, and you can easily tell.
So APT is then generating for all the languages I do have, you will create a corresponding string. And I think this is helpful because I think maybe I've told this story on the podcast before, but earlier on in my career, our product was localized to Japanese. And so I would run the product in Japanese locale to make sure it was internationalized, but I don't speak or read Japanese at all. And I remember once the Japanese localization center filed a bug saying, hey, you know, this one word isn't translated. And of course, I had not noticed because this was all gibberish to me. I don't read Japanese. And I was just confused. There was another, you know, set of symbols from another Asian language that somehow got in there. Mm. And that's why it's an advantage to have a pseudo locale where you can actually navigate your way around in the tool. I mean, this was Emacs. So I was just like going, fourth item is going to be this, seventh item is going to be that. And it's nice to be able to click through your UI to actually use it in a way that you can actually use it, but still can tell if there's a bug you should report.
Yeah, really useful.
So I think we're running close to time. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we simply forgot to ask about?
I think we covered a lot. There's a lot about the resource system that that I don't think is common knowledge. And one thing I want to do right while I'm here is definitely add some more documentation, more explanation, help tooling to understand everything. I'm looking forward to improving the performance and helping apps scale better. And those are, and then overlays and seeing what we can do to allow customization of third-party applications potentially in the future, customizations in general of like Android. Resources have a lot of power, and the resource system is an integral part of the platform. And yeah, seeing how it interacts with Compose would be really interesting, see what we can do to make resources, like while we're evaluating like XML, we should also like evaluate resources, see what we can do better too.
Well, cool.
Great. Thanks. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.